Some of you, you make your dreams come true. I'm going to give some of you the opportunity to go home early. So let me tell you what I'm talking about today, what I'm addressing. And then if none of this applies to you, you're dismissed. There's no reason to sit here through a sermon that has no application to you. So you're free to go home. No judgment, no criticism. You're just free to get up and go. But I would encourage you, if the things that I am going to talk about are something that might apply to you, I would encourage you to stay, because what I'm going to give you is the answer. I'm going to give you the answer to these issues. And so, are you dealing with any of these things? Is there anything in life right now that's difficult for you or troubling to you? Are you troubled by anything? Is anything hard, difficult in your life right now? Is there anything in your life that has you confused, or that you are uncertain how to proceed? Have any of you received difficult news? Some sort of news or report, or some sort of somebody told you something that you didn't want to hear? Is there anything in your life that is other than, different from what you would like for it to be, that you cannot change, you're just going to have to accept it? Are any of you having difficulties in a relationship, or maybe have lost a relationship and are upset about it? Is there anything in your life that you feel like you need the answers, but you do not have them? Anything in your life that you do not understand, that you just have to accept? So I would encourage you, if any of those things applied to you, that you stay. If not, you're free to go. But for those who stay, I'm going to give you, or John is going to give you, the answer to all of those. And I want you to notice what I said. John is going to give you the answer. There is one answer to all of those things. One answer. So that vast array of things that I talked about, there's one answer. I'm going to read our text. It's in John 13, and it goes into chapter 14. I think that we need to read the whole text. It starts in 13. Normally, when we get to deal with the actual verse we're sort of focusing on, we start with 14:1, which is unfortunate. Jesus says in chapter 14 and verse 1, "Do not let your heart be troubled." And then he talks about that, which is just weird. If I stood up here and said, before I said anything else, if I just stood up here and said, "Don't worry, I've got it with me, and I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to fix it. You don't need to worry about it. Don't worry, I've got it handled." You would be thoroughly confused as to what the "it" is. What's he talking about? What's the subject? That's what happens when we start with John 14:1. Do not let your heart, whose heart, be troubled. About what? And then he goes through and discusses what he's going to do, but we don't really know what he's talking about unless we started back at the end of 13. We never want to let a chapter division get in the way of understanding what the text says. So we're going to read the text. What I want you to hear is two things as we read the text. I want you to hear two things. What are their questions? What are their questions? Jesus is talking to the disciples. What are they asking? And what is the answer? John 13 and verse 33. I'm going to skip part of it. It will do no violence to the context, but I want to keep the thought together. John 13 and verse 33, Jesus is speaking. "Little children," Jesus is talking to the disciples, "I am with you a little while longer. You will seek me, and as I said to the Jews, now I also say to you, where I am going, you cannot come." Verse 36. Simon Peter said to him, Lord, where are you going? Jesus answered, where I go, you cannot follow me now, but you will follow later. Peter said to him, Lord, why can I not follow you right now? I'll lay down my life for you. Jesus answered, will you lay down your life for me? Truly, truly, I say to you, a rooster will not crow until you deny me three times. Do not let your heart be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you, for I go to prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also, and you know the way where I'm going. Thomas said to him, Lord, we do not know where you're going. How do we know the way? Jesus said to him, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. If you had known me, you would have known my Father also. From now on, you know him and have seen him. Have you read that passage before? What a familiar passage, right? Very familiar with that passage. But I think not with what it really conveys for most people. Not really understanding, really being impacted by what's going on. Being familiar with it and really getting it are two different things. I read growing up and heard sermons, all the stuff about the lowest person there, wash the feet, right? Because that happened in 13. Jesus has washed their feet. He's announced the betrayal of Him by one of His disciples. I've heard all the sermons, but I get it. I know the technical details of it. But I can tell you that very few people ever really get the impact of the passage, and I can tell you that because I didn't until I was about 50 years old. Knowing all the facts, have known them for years. I was at camp several years ago, and the director of the week, who at the time was also on the board of camp, so he's the man, is preaching during an assembly one night, and he calls a few of the men up to the front where he has chairs for them. Now, I knew what he was talking about, and I thought, oh no, please, please don't let this be what I think it's going to be. And he sat them down, and he got a basin with water and a towel, and guess what he started to do? Wash their feet. I wanted to crawl in a hole. I wasn't up there with them. I was watching it. And I just wanted it to stop. Here's a man on his knees washing the feet at camp, some rank feet of other men. The director, a board member, and I just kept thinking, please stop. The other thought I had was, I'm so glad that's not me. A couple of years later, the same guy was teaching a lesson about the same basic topic, and he called some men to the front, and guess what? I was one of them. And we sat down, and he took off our shoes and socks, and he began to wash our feet. I didn't get the passage until that moment. I didn't get it. My feeling is that unless something has happened, most of us don't really get it. So let me bring it into our day with someone we know. Troy will be glad that I've chosen him. He was late getting here this morning, and I thought, well, I'm still going to use Troy. It'd be a lot more fun if Troy was here. And so here he is. So I want you to imagine, and those of you who don't know Troy, will what I'm saying will become clear very quickly. Let's say that Troy is with his family, and someone says to Troy, "Troy, how about a crab boil tonight? Clam bake tonight." Okay, that's better, Troy, thank you. "So how about a clam bake tonight?" And Troy says, "I want a clam bake. I was thinking maybe some lemon pepper seasoned tofu with a nice citrus salad and a warm mango tea." His family would be like, "What happened to Troy?" And then they notice that Troy is listening to the radio, but it's not George Jones. It's opera. Troy's listening to opera. And then somebody says, "Troy, the race is on. Put on the race." And Troy says, No. "No, I got to catch the latest episode of Say Yes to the Dress." So at this point, Troy's family is wondering, what is up with Troy? And then while they're all together, Troy says to his family, "I'm leaving. I'm leaving." His family naturally says, "Where are you going?" And Troy says, "I can't tell you. I'm going away, but I can't tell you where I'm going." And they said, "Well, okay, but we'll go with you. We don't want you to go away and be apart. We'll go with you." And Troy says, "You can't. You can't go. You have to stay here. I'm going away." And they say, "Well, okay, give us directions. That way we can find you later." And Troy says, "I can't give you directions. I'm going away. You cannot come, and I will not tell you where I'm going." And then to top it all off, Troy begins to accuse his family of disloyalty and accuses says that one of his family members is going to turn him in for something to the police. And at this point, Troy's family thinks what? He's lost his mind. This is just crazy. What is he talking about? What is even going on? Do you see how if Troy had that conversation with his family, that would be impossible to get your head around? That's what Jesus is doing here. It's already been a challenging night. The Messiah has washed feet and then said, "One of you is going to turn me in." And then he says, "I'm going away." Now, they've been together for 3 years, every single day. And Jesus says, "I'm going away. You can't come with me. I'm not telling you where I'm going. You can't come. You've got to stay. We will not be together anymore." And on top of all that, he says to Peter, and Peter, Mr. Tough Guy, Mr. Spiritual Superman, "You are going to chicken out and deny me and turn your back on me." Can you imagine how the disciples felt? How could they handle what Jesus has confronted them with? How would you feel? No doubt, you, like them, would be anxious, confused, bewildered, upset, lost. When we feel that way, what would we like? When we feel like that, when we feel confused, or we don't know what's going on, or we're not sure what to do, what would we like to have? Several things. I think one thing that we would love to have is a program or a plan. Somebody give me a program. Somebody give me a plan and tell me what is going on. Or we might want a procedure. Somebody give me the procedure here. I don't know what to do. Somebody tell me the next step. I don't know how to proceed. I saw this meme the other day. 13-year-old me, "Don't tell me what to do. Me now." Could someone tell me exactly, in chronological order and with great detail, what I have to do? Do you feel that at all? That's me every day. I want someone to tell me exactly how to proceed. Maybe we want to make some preparation. Tell me how to prepare. Tell me how to get things together so that I can do something about this confusing situation. And what Jesus is going to say is, you don't need a program. I'm not going to give you a plan. I'm not going to tell you the procedure. There's no way to prepare for it. You don't need any of that. Did you hear what Jesus said to them? Did you catch the answer of Jesus in our passage? Jesus said, what you need is a person. What you need is a person. What you need is me. Think about a small child who is upset. Maybe there's a storm going on at night. They're in their bed. Mom and dad are in their bed, and there's a storm, and maybe the power's gone out, and now the child is terrified. Can I ask you a question? What does the child want? Does the child want you to come in and sit down by their bed and say, okay, now listen, I know you're terrified. I know you're scared. I know you're anxious. I know you're worried. But listen, there's nothing under the bed. There's nothing in the closet. I've looked. We can go look. We'll go look at it, see if there's anything there. I know the power's out, but listen, that's okay because the electricians, electricity and wires and all that stuff, and explain all that stuff. And you give them all that stuff, and you explain all of that stuff, and then they go, oh, okay, you explained it. Now I'm okay. Is that what a child wants? What does a child who's worried and scared and confused want? Do they want a plan? Do they want a procedure? Or do they want a person? What they want is for you to what? Be there with them. We just sang about this, but I'm not sure we really understand it. We just sang about it. What did we sing about the Lord? Be what? Be with me. We just sang about it. But I'm not sure that we really understand. This is what Jesus is telling the disciples. You have questions. You're confused. You want information. You don't need any of that. What you need is me. What you need is a person. We know that salvation is only in Jesus. That's what our passage is about. But I'm not sure that we really fully understand exactly what that means. Jesus says, you don't need a plan. You do not need information. What you need is me. You need for me to be with you. You need me. Notice the disturbing things that Jesus tells His disciples. You cannot come. I don't know about you, but I don't like to be told cannot. What does being told cannot make you want to do? You can't do that. Now what do you want to do? That. You cannot. You can't do it. Okay, now I want to do it more than I ever did. I didn't even really want to do it before. But now that you said I can't do it, now I want to do it. Jesus said to His disciples, you cannot come. I know we've been together 3 years. You can't come. They said to Him, wait a minute, where are you going? Where are you going? You see the question. And if you read those verses with anything other than this tremendous anguish of confusion and sadness, you're misreading it. Where are you going? Troy tells his family, I am leaving. We cannot be together. I'm going away. How would they feel? Where are you going? Why can't we come with you? Why? Why can I not come with you? I don't want to be without you. Why can't I come with you? And then what He says to Peter, you're going to deny me. You're going to turn your back on me. This is very difficult. They have these questions. The response of Jesus is, do not let your heart be troubled. So if we just start there, if we just start with 14:1, we don't know any of that stuff. He says, do not, and by the way, don't miss the fact that this comes immediately after His statement to Peter, you'll deny me 3 times. Don't miss that. You're going to deny me. That would have broken Peter's heart, but Jesus says, it's going to happen, but don't be crushed. Don't let your heart be troubled. Verse 1, why not? Don't miss this. Don't be troubled. Why not? Because you can believe in me. The implication in the verse, believe in God, believe also in me. Here's the implication of that. You already believe in God. Your full faith and confidence are in God. I want you to believe in me as much as you believe in God. That's what Jesus is saying. I want your confidence in me to be as solid as your confidence in the Father. Believe in me. Trust me. Have confidence in me. And then he says in verse 2, in my Father's house are many dwelling places. Notice his statement, if it were not so, I would have told you. What he's saying to them is, you can trust what I'm telling you. Believe my word. Trust me. Trust my word. Trust what I'm telling you. Have confidence that what I'm telling you is the way it is. This is the truth. Jesus says, I am the way to get you from here to where you want to go. Now, there's a very important question that we need to answer here. And that the question is, where is that? Talk about something that I think we need an adjustment in thinking on. So listen to what Jesus is saying. Jesus says, I am the means for getting you from where you are to where you want to go. Where did they want to be? Where did they want to go? What was the ultimate location of those disciples? In their mind, their thought is, the one place I can be and be the most happy is what? If you said heaven, you're only partly right. Where is the place? Where is the place that the disciples can be and everything be fine? Everything be good? Everything be peaceful? Where's the one place? If you said heaven, you only got part of it. What does he say to them? I can get you from where you are to where you want to go. Normally in verse 2, we put the emphasis on the dwelling places, don't we? Normally in verse 2, we put the emphasis on the dwelling places. King James says mansions, I think. But whatever, that's fine. We're not going to quibble. The idea is just simply places you can live. That's the idea. But when we think about where we're going, we think, oh, mansions. And as if that weren't enough, we get over to Revelation, and now we learn that when we walk out and onto the street, what? It's made out of gold. We're like, oh, man, this is going to be awesome. I mean, we got mansions in a street of gold. Others probably steak every night, and loaded baked potatoes, and chocolate pudding for dessert. And I know some people are chocolate pudding. That's the best you got? That's my favorite. And if they don't have it, I'm not sure I'm going to stay. But that's a whole other conversation. But we get this thing in our head, right? We're like the heaven man with the mansions and the gold and all that stuff. And we get all wrapped up in that stuff. That's not his emphasis. That's not his emphasis. We zero in on the dwelling places. That's not where he zeroes in. The dwelling places are a means to an end. Next month, Lord willing, my mother and I are going to go to Nebraska. And you say, why in the world would any person want to go to Nebraska? One reason. My son and my grandkids are there. My son and my grandchildren are there. And so my mother and I had planned a very brief trip to fly out to Nebraska, see my son Jack, see my grandkids, and then come back. Now, in order to make that happen, in order for us to go out there and stay for a couple of days, we had to book a room, right? Because in my son's apartment, there are not many dwelling places. So, in order to go, listen to what I'm saying, in order to go and see my son and my grandkids, what did I need? I need a room. And I've been talking to people about the trip. Do you think I've been talking about the room? Do you think I'm telling people, next month I get to fly to Nebraska and stay in a hotel room? It's got two beds and a TV. Free breakfast. Do you think that when I get there, my focus will be staying in the room? Do you think I'm going to be taking pictures of the room and sending them back home? Do you think when I get back, people are going to go, "How was the trip?" "Oh, that room was great." You see what I'm saying? I'm going to Nebraska to see my son and my grandkids. The room is just a way to be with him and them. But when we talk about heaven, what do we talk about? The room. When we talk about heaven, we talk about the street. When we talk about heaven, we talk about everything except what heaven is about, which is what? Who is there? Jesus said to His disciples, "I will come again." And look at what He says. "And receive you," what? "To Me." Not to a mansion. Not to a condo. "I will receive you to Myself." That statement of purpose. That what? "Where I am, there you may be." Did you ever catch that before? That where I am. I'm going to come back and get you so we can be together again. When we started reading in chapter 13, what was the disciples' problem? Jesus was leaving and they could not be together. What is Jesus' answer? "I'm going to come back and get you," and what? "We'll be together." Jesus says that where I'm going to take you is to My Father's house. And where I'm going to get you to is a relationship with the Father. Yes, there are blessings in heaven. Yes, there are things to enjoy in heaven, but they are only there because the Father is there and because Jesus is there. I love to travel. People ask me, "What do you want to do? If you could do anything in the world, what would it be?" Travel, travel, travel. That's what I want to do. I want to travel. So that's my bucket list thing, is traveling. And I love to go and see things. I love to go to other places and do things. I love to go on vacation and buy stuff. I love to go on vacation and experience things. But do you know what I love most about vacation? It's my family. And I know that what I love most about vacation is my family, because if I could take one thing away, I ask myself, if I could take one thing away, how would I enjoy it more? So in other words, I want to go to the UK, not the University of Kentucky. I've been there many times, although it is a fabulous place. But I'm talking about the United Kingdom. My ultimate goal in life is to go to the United Kingdom. So I ask myself, all right, I get my family together, we go to the United Kingdom. We tour the United, we see all the United Kingdom stuff, right? We go to the United Kingdom. So if I could take one thing away, my family or the United Kingdom, which one would I be happier with? So I get to go to the United Kingdom, but my family can't come. Now I don't want to go. I don't want to go. It has no appeal to me if my family's not there. But if you take the United Kingdom and I get to keep my family, now what? It's all good. It's okay. Heaven is about who's there. Heaven is about a person. It's not about the place. The disciples didn't care really where Jesus was going. What did they care about? Being with Him. They wanted to be together. So Jesus says, if you want to get what's most important, it takes a person. I am that person. Jesus says in verse 6, I am the way. I want to think about what that means, and then we'll wrap up and be done. I went to Jamaica many years ago. I was a young man, unmarried, and went with a bunch of other young men under the leadership of a friend of ours named Mark, who was older than us, a lot of experience, preaching a long time, and had done a lot of mission work. And so Mark, every year Mark would get a bunch of young guys together and go take a mission trip to the Caribbean. We went to Jamaica. And I don't mean like the grill, like resort sandals Jamaica. I don't mean that, but like out in the sticks of Jamaica to do mission work. And so Mark made all the arrangements. He made the itinerary. He made the schedule. He made the lesson plans. He made every decision. When we got up in the morning, we would meet together and have breakfast, and Mark would say, here's the plan. And then when we got done eating, we would all get up, and Mark would start walking, and we would all fall in line behind him, a little row of ducks, and we would all walk behind him to wherever it was we were going to teach that day. And we would just stay right behind him. And then we would spread out in a region, and we would teach all day. And then when it started to get dark, Mark would come and pick us up, and he'd go in the front, and we'd all get behind him, and we'd walk right behind him. Had no idea where we were. Had no idea where we were. Had no clue where we were going. Had no idea what the plan was. But we did not need to be told the way. We did not need to know the way, because Mark was the way. Mark was the way. And he could have given us all sorts of information, and it wouldn't have made one bit of difference, because we didn't have a clue where we were. But Mark simply said, it's time to go. And he got up, and he started walking, and we fell in behind and followed him wherever he went. Did what he said. Mark was the way. We didn't need information. We needed a person. And when we were done, the week was over, or the 2 weeks the first time, when we were done, what we all wanted more than anything was to go to the airport, get on a plane, and get home. And the only way that was going to happen is if every single day we fell in behind Mark and followed him, trusted him, obeyed him. If we would do that, we would get our work done, and at the end of our work, we would get to fly home. But only if we followed and obeyed the way. And the same thing is true for us. Listen, Jesus gives us commands that tell us how to follow the way. Jesus said, unless you believe that I am He, you will die in your sins. Jesus said that when disciples are made, that part of making them a disciple will be baptism. You will baptize them. That is part of the process. And He said, when you are a follower of mine, you must daily follow me. I'm going to ask you a question in just a minute. First of all, let me tell you that next week, Lord willing, that passage is wrong there, by the way. Next week, we'll be looking at James chapter 2. Salvation is by faith, but not alone. We'll talk about that, Lord willing, next Sunday morning. Tonight, right, class, or are you doing? Okay. So tonight we'll be talking about first the second coming in the Thessalonian letters, as we've been doing on Sunday nights for a while. That'll be a Bible class tonight at 6 p.m. right here at the church building. So I want to ask you a question. Here's what Jesus said. Jesus said, you need me. Jesus said, you need me. And Jesus said, if you are going to have me, you must believe in me. You must be baptized into a relationship with me. And you must daily follow me. My question to you is this. Where are you in that process? Where are you in that process? Are you not yet to believe? You don't yet believe in Jesus. Jesus makes some pretty strong claims. I think it is to your benefit to investigate them and see if you should believe in Him. And we would love to study with you if that's where you are. Maybe you have started to believe, but have not yet been baptized. Jesus said that, Peter said that forgiveness of sin and the gift of the Holy Spirit come after baptism, not before. If you have not yet been baptized, we would love to talk with you about that and why you need to do it and why it's essential. Maybe you have been baptized and you should be at the stage of following Him daily, but you are not. You have been baptized, but you are not following Him daily. You are following Him sporadically, or following Him occasionally, or following Him not at all. We'd love to help with that. Maybe you do follow Him daily, but what you would really love is to take your relationship with Him to the next level, and you don't know how to do that. We can help. So wherever you are on that spectrum of events, if you decide that you need help to go to the next level, we can help you with that, and we'd love to. As we're singing the song and you decide to get help, and I hope that you will, you can decide to let us know and we'll talk privately after church, or you can come forward and take a seat on the front as we stand and sing.